6, 6, 6.
Hello and welcome to Podcast on Fire 10. Yes, double digits and a new year. What a start. Tonight we're joined with the one and only Ken.
Hello everybody.
So with it being a fresh start to the new year, thinking right away we'll get down to the questions. Marn over at the Podcast on Fire forums, which is podcastonfire.com/forum. We suggest you all to join because there's plenty of benefits in it, trust me. Now, our first question tonight, pointing the question to Ken. Martin asks, what single film would you show to someone who has never seen an Asian film before?
Difficult question. It really is a difficult question. I'm actually going to give you my answer and then just a long-winded reason why and why it's a difficult question. I would say The Killer.
Right.
John Woo's The Killer. And I'm hesitating because it really is a hard question to answer because there are so many genres, distinctive genres, in Hong Kong cinema to start with that even new viewers, maybe they want to experience something uniquely Eastern. And obviously The Killer is uniquely Eastern because it's a classic Hong Kong movie, but it's not a uniquely Eastern film in terms of its setting, its action. It's a modern setting, it's not a supernatural or period movie or anything like that, but I think it's a good film to start with. It's from the golden age, it's everyone at the top of the game, John Woo at his very best, and Chow Yun-fat at his very best, you know, the big star that he was at that point, and done a few John Woo movies already, and the year before he did like a massive amount of movies as well, different genres, but here came The Killer. It's sort of an immortal classic, despite it being, you know, if you look at it, it's kind of cheesy in a way, the melodrama and the sort of brotherhood loyalty, but it really doesn't matter, it can't die, and therefore it has all the elements to sort of make or break a new Asian film fan, if you will. You know, it's a genre to start with. If you don't appreciate this, I have other stuff to offer you, and that's why you really should expand maybe that question to like two or three distinctive genres if you have that amount of time on your hands with your friend. You know, so as a, you know, a sub answer to that question, I would definitely try and squeeze in, you know, the outside of The Killer, maybe stuff like a Chinese ghost story,
right,
where you have something uniquely Eastern, as you probably remember, Stu. Mm-hmm. You know, you have a rap number in the middle of the film from Wu Ma's Taoist priest. Remember that one? So it's all slightly all over the place as well. It's sort of wacky and then it turns scary, and there's, you know, a good romance, and also, you know, a great finale and what basically was hell, I guess. You know, you have a Chinese ghost story, and if I had to choose a third one, I'm still staying within the golden age, and I guess I'll have to say Once Upon a Time in China,
right?
Choi Hak. And you sort of get that I think it's healthy to sort of paint the picture that Hong Kong cinema is quite a lot. It can be quite a lot in one film, and it can be quite a lot like all cinema. It has diversity. But overall, the top of the list is The Killer, and hopefully a passionate fan is born out of that watch.
When you mentioned Once Upon a Time in China, that kind of struck up something I was thinking to bring up with what seemed to be a good film to introduce me and my friends, because this was early when I started collecting, and I was just buying X rentals of Hong Kong Legends, and we picked up the Iron Monkey.
Oh yeah.
And obviously comparing that to action movies we have coming from Hollywood, this was crazy. It's like it was a mixture of cheesy over the top wire work. Must have watched it with a dubbing by then, which the dubbing was cheesy, but there's just something fucking damn fun about the film.
I actually haven't seen Iron Monkey, and it's a case of me not having. I want to see it, but I'm not in a rush. Mm-hmm. In a rush to see it. But what is the structure of the film? Is it light and wacky and serious, or do they keep sort of a through line of moods?
It is probably more serious, where Wong Fei Hung actually being betrayed by, like, when he was just a child.
Oh, yeah.
And it'd be like sort of hijink, wee schemes he gets into, and but still showing like the skills, which would be later portrayed as by Jet Li with the stuff with the umbrella, and it would be Donnie Yen as like just the cold father who would be telling him off, but still he has a little bit of a sense of humour as well.
It's one of Donnie's better roles, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, under the producing skills and directing skills of Choi Hak, I think Donnie has done his very best work, starting Once Upon a Time in China 2. Mm-hmm. I believe Choi Hak produced Iron Monkey.
Yeah, he's somewhat involved.
Yeah. Rumor has it that even if Choi Hak produces his, he's not content sitting back. He likes to get in the fray, so you never know how much influence he had on that. But probably a distinctly Yuen Woo Ping film, despite.
Yeah. Now, thinking about my films I would suggest, thinking...
Young and Dangerous.
Now, that was a good guess.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
It wasn't actually one of my suggestions, but that did happen to be a film that my friends did rather enjoy.
Well, I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah,
making a cheap joke.
That's Mike Jobs, not yours.
Ah, sorry about that.
Okay, so one of my suggestions was Kung Fu Hustle.
Yeah, surely.
That I always find it hard not to love this film because the comedy works on so many levels. Even just showing somebody the knife throwing scene, and that I can't keep a straight face during that clip.
What is the subtitle? Who's throwing handles? By the woman there, Yun Ki. That is the line I love. Who's throwing handles? So you're absolutely correct. You can't keep a straight face in it. Isn't it a fun scene to watch out of context as well? If you just show like 5 minutes, look at this. This is fucked up.
Yeah, especially when I think it was Lam Chi Chung notices the blade in his arm.
Yeah,
and kind of thinks to himself, "No,
is it?" Goes south after that.
He takes it out to have a better inspection. No, it's not, and puts it back in.
and then you have the snake capping the scene, and they have something uniquely, well, not uniquely Eastern, but sort of it's funny. Mm-hmm. That damn was funny.
It's, you know, almost like Looney Tunes.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking about Kung Fu Hustle because, you know, as years go by, there are obviously new sort of reference works and classics that are suitable to show a new audience, and hence the reason they're also getting like international releases, because it's suitable for new audiences. I just went with my gut, I guess, to show people that the 80s stuff mainly, to see if that still works with people, because I think it's a testament to cinema when it survives, you know, year after year, decade after decade. I mean, these are 80s movies, obviously, and some 80s elements you can't really avoid. If I want to carry on where my passion started, I would like to start there. But the path and trip to Kung Fu Hustle is not far off. It would definitely be in that like top 5 or top 10 must-see lists. Anyway,
another film which kind of runs along the lines with you, I was thinking Hard Boiled, because that's just another roller coaster ride of fucking bullets flying everywhere, two men taking on the world.
Yeah, I guess it's an easier John Woo film to watch if you're, you know, you never know if the new viewer is into drama at all. And at times with drama and stuff like Better Tomorrow and The Killer can feel rather, you know, cheesy and overdone, and that's a style that they used in those films. So Hardboiled, sort of, you know, John Woo has said that he was mad when he made that film, and he was trying to, you know, get that anger on screen. But that's just a popcorn movie. It's a 2-hour popcorn movie, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. It's classic nonetheless, but no one will say that this has, you know, the dramatic power of Bullet in the Head, you know, and or The Kill or any other of his, you know, 80s movies. But it's an easy movie. And you know, two hours kind of fly by.
Yeah.
Especially since the climax is like 45 minutes.
Something along the lines of that. And one last, which is another recent, well, it's not a trend, another recent explosion on the screen, and it could also work very well being taken out of context, is the movies of Tony Jaa. Because many a time showing people these movies, I usually skip through the story, because that isn't the strongest elements towards his movies. It's more likely the knee to your face. Mm-hmm. And I think, who doesn't enjoy the mindless violence of Tony Jaa?
Again, it's going internationally, and it shows that, you know, they believe that it can get into the minds of people. You know, easily digestible, kick-ass entertainment. Which is there's nothing wrong with that, but as we discussed a few podcasts ago, I hope they won't be stuck making hollow entertainment, you know, over and over and over again. Even though they were sort of the first, I guess it's fair to say that the team behind Ong Bak, they were the first to break that kind of Thai action cinema. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, they will lead the way in some other direction too. Because it's going to be hollow after a while.
Exactly.
Well, the advantage would be if they kept on doing what they are doing right now, sort of just basic frame stories for as an excuse for the action. Just cut every movie down to 70 minutes or something like that. You know, to not waste like 30 minutes to, you know, talk to each other. Complete waste of time. but as I said, it's going to be interesting to see what kind of direction it goes.
Moving on to our second question tonight, could either of us recommend any good books on Asian cinema?
Well, there are a handful out there. I always start with, you know, we were talking about new viewers, and so and this is sort of a back to basics podcast anyway, but the Bay Logan book, Hong Kong Action Cinema, which is sort of out of date in a way, but still a perfectly suitable and sufficient introduction to key elements of Hong Kong action cinema, including all the way back to the black and white Wong Fei Hung films. I think there's a chapter entirely devoted to the star of those movies, Quan Tai Hing. People may have seen subsequently in Dreadnought. He played Wong Fei Hung again in that film, and also a few years earlier in The Skyhawk, where he co-starred alongside Sammo Hung. Dreadnought is, as an aside, my absolute favorite Yuen Woo Ping film. Quite an underrated film. It sort of isn't be expected in terms of action, but if you look at it, it's really well put together. But it's also all over the place in a classic Hong Kong cinema way. So sort of a masked serial killer plot, and you're doing laundry kung fu. There's some, you know, Quan Tai Hing is one of my favorite scenes, when he beats up Fong Hao On, doing sort of a, employing his medicine techniques on him, while Fong Hao On tries to assassinate him or hurt him, but Quan Tai Hing sort of beats him up in a rather cool way. I can't really explain it, but it's a very cool sequence out of Dreadnought. Good film, classic. Oh, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
Well, Bay Logan's action cinema, Hong Kong action cinema, is really good introduction, and I actually go ahead and mention, you know, if you want to go further into that dreaded thing of reading, there's a book by critic Paul Fonaroff. He's a native of Cleveland, Ohio, but studied Chinese and speaks Chinese and writes for, I don't know if there's many magazines he writes for, but he's a film critic in Hong Kong. And he wrote a book called At the Hong Kong Movies, 600 Reviews from 1998 till the Handover. I haven't read that actually, but I've been recommended it. And Paul Fonaroff is known for not liking the majority of the films he watches, but he's actually good authority on the scene. Not in general, he's a good authority despite, and also a good authority on older movies. I believe he did a few interviews on the Shaw Brothers DVDs for the very older movies, the musicals and stuff, and he has a good knowledge of that, and it's not, we don't encounter experts like that as much, so he's a good authority to have. So At the Hong Kong Movies is a good one, and my final tip, as sort of a reference work, a book that you can just pick up and read a review here and there, is a book by John Charles called The Hong Kong Filmography, 1977-1997. It's a reference to over 1,100 films that he reviewed over the years, and he chooses the known things, but also goes a little bit to the underground, and unearths some of the obscure things, the exploitation films perhaps, but just in general a good mixture, and he suits my taste definitely. Don't be discouraged by the absolutely lame cover of his of his very big book. It's actually the content is good, but the cover, the Kung Fu cover, is absolutely terrible, and the font used is sort of, you know, stereotypical, if anything. You'll notice stuff like that. Even the font screams out lame. So yeah, any good tips, Stu?
Well, there's never really, well, it's not really a thing I've looked into too much when coming into Hong Kong cinema about what books should I look up on, because obviously most books you can't find in store. You're either having to have a look on eBay or Amazon for second-hand copies. But still, some of them are pretty good when you put the effort into finding them.
So they're, we're talking out of print stuff, of even the stuff I mentioned, and the general? Mm-hmm. The general? Okay. That's a shame.
But, yeah, over here, it's just like finding gold dust. Everything I've had to get is obviously had to order online as old second-hand copies. But still, when you get a hold of them, it's worth it. One book I got into reading was Hollywood East, Hong Kong Movies and the People Who Make Them, by Stephen Hammond, who most people know for some of his memorable commentaries for Hong Kong Legends. He also wrote another book before that, which was either Sex and Zen and A Bullet in the Head.
That was it.
Or vice versa.
No, that was it, I think. It's a crap title. And when you said memorable, you were sort of doing the quotation marks with your fingers? Memorable commentaries?
I'm afraid so.
I've said nothing and I've said everything.
Yeah. For anyone that's seen Postman Fights Back and listened to the audio commentary, yeah, we feel for you, buddy. Anyway, this book sort of relates more, I would say, from the portion I've read, relates more to the thousands of triad movies, the darker, less star-studded Johnny Toe movies. It does cover most things. That I think they do have the top 10 kung fu movie dubs, as well as top 10 memorable quotes from like those horribly, horribly dubbed old kung fu movies.
Question, Stu. You mentioned Johnny Toe. Does it cover the initial Milky Way output from late 90s up to the mission and stuff? Or
yeah, he covered, from what I could remember, I'm sure there was Expect Unexpected, The Longest Night. I think that was a Johnny Toe film.
He isn't credited on either of those, but it's fairly known that he probably ghost directed those right. two films in an extensive way, but they are fucking excellent anyways. Mm-hmm. No matter.
There's mostly films just similar to those. To me, they're obviously very unknown films because I've not treaded that far into the water, but still, it's stuff I'd like to look into in the future. I think there's also a film between Tony Leung, Chiu-Wai, and Jordan Chan. Can't think of the title of it, the new, but
was
still,
it a triad
flick? Yeah.
I don't know if Jordan Chan was in War of the Underworld, but
I think that it might be, or is there someone similar looking?
You know what, folks? We are going to reference the deep parts of our brain here, and look it up on the internet. We're doing Podcast on Fire this. In this naked way, and unfortunately the internet is kind of slow right now, so I am going to find out. But go ahead, Stu. Do you remember any specific other films that you really responded to while reading?
There was a chapter spent. I think Christopher Doyle provided some work into the book, where he referred back to the Wong Kar Wai movie. Is it Happy Together, or I get mixed up between the Zhang Yimou movie and the Wong Kar Wai movie, but it's the film with Tony Leung and Leslie Cheung.
Well, that is Happy Together, the gay romance drama set in Buenos Aires.
Yeah, I think there's a chapter of basically just Christopher Doyle stressing over how lengthy the takes does. I think they overshot quite a bit, and how Wong Kar Wai came up with the unique camera style, or the unique filming style to that movie.
Yeah. Well, wasn't that sort of established in prior Wong Kar Wai films, or was something different in regards to that? Or you don't remember?
Well, from what I could remember in the book, it was something like a camera was left on the bed whilst filming, and they looked back to it and realised that was a great idea, so they started doing shots over again from this new angle of just the camera lying around.
So Fisheye style, maybe. I don't remember the shots in Happy Together, but it's if anyone has seen the documentary that they made to accompany the film, was something like Buenos Aires something degrees, I don't remember specifically, but there's like tons of footage that always make up not an entire new feature film, but sort of totally discarded storylines. If I remember correctly, there was even a storyline with Tony Leung where he had sort of a romance with a woman.
That's right.
So, but it's that documentary is sort of loosely put together. So all of a sudden you realize you've been watching, you know, part behind the scenes footage and for the last 10 minutes, sort of roughly edited, deleted scenes. So I think many people enjoyed that documentary. Alongside the actual movie Happy Together. Not my favorite Wong Kar Wai film, I like Ashes of Time much better.
Right.
To track back a little bit, Tony Leung and Jordan Chan is in War of the Underworld. So even though that might not have been a memorable movie or a memorable, you know, chapter in the book, that was the film directed by Han Yao.
We can now move on without having that haunting us for the rest of the episode.
It would fucking haunt me. I must know. You know, who was the DOP and who did the music, I must know, and then I'm stuck on the database for 10 minutes while you speak to yourself.
And a book you already mentioned was Hong Kong Action Cinema, which was the first book I picked up, mainly because I had known B. Logan more through his work as a commentator for Hong Kong Legends.
Yep.
And realising the guy's also got a book out there, I was damn needing to see this book.
It's been a few years before, I think. Any affiliation with Hong Kong Legends.
Mm-hmm. But still, it is. Both books are great books you could go back to as reference books. If you're researching a film, which I think probably will have to be prior to 1997, or the 1997 Hammond book goes up to, I think, maybe the year 2000.
Mm.
But still, if you can't find anything, well, if the books are outdated, the internet's never outdated, so
yeah,
I'm sure you can find stuff on any movie anywhere on here.
Yeah, and sort of the classic players, some Hong Yuk Chan, their essential careers are covered. I mean, obviously, the 80s and stuff is well represented, and as you say, it will be a book that therefore will live on and can live on.
So, starting sort of a new segment into our show, new show, new year, new segment, and it's Ken. It's actually Ken's Underrated Movies.
Do I get my own theme tune?
No.
Oh. Well, again, I can't do this without a theme tune or any. That's my fuel. No, I'm just kidding.
Shut it, monkey. Start talking.
Well, I should initially say that this segment shouldn't exclusively be me. You know, if you have any underrated movies, other podcasters, it's a good segment to bring it up and try and enlighten people why they should discover this movie. Mm. The term underrated, I'm sort of divided in terms of what that means at times. I mean, the movies I generally speak of that I want to enlighten people about are movies that are basically not rated. There are no opinions of it out there. Very sparse amount of opinions. And then you have the underrated, that means that you're really devoted to sort of not kill off bad opinions, because opinions are opinions, but try and highlight the fact that this has something more to offer than meets the eye. You have to look really, a bit harder at it to find out if it's actually good, and maybe rewatch it. You have stuff like Ashes of Time, the Wong Kar-wai film,
right,
which sort of grows every viewing because it's sort of a puzzle. A character drama, but for this particular segment, for the segment debut, I've chosen a movie that has a minor cult following but has been buried on other formats aside DVD, so it's not very known. It's a movie called Once Upon a Time in Triad Society. It was made in 1996 during the heyday, the big triad boom that hit Hong Kong in 1996, and that was thanks to a movie that was called, Stu? Young and Dangerous.
Yeah, Young and Dangerous.
And, everyone wanted to cash in, but the director, Cha Chun-yi, and screenwriter Rika Chung had another idea. Let's try and make fun of it all. Try and break down the triad conventions and look at this genre as, you know, a Xerox copied genre. After, you know, 10 movies, we are trying to make something different. So the basic premise is, it's actually a spin-off from Young and Dangerous in a way, because Francis reprises his character of Ugly Quan, was the villain in the first Young and Dangerous film. But he's not really in the same movie universe as Young and Dangerous. He doesn't interact with the story that he was in. It's just his own movie, his own satire, if you like. And by placing him alone in this movie, they give him a chance to tell him his story. What made him so vile? What made him so absolutely the most unsympathetic character you'll ever find? You know, within 5 minutes of this movie, he's attempted rape of a girl. I believe he beat up some Japanese triads and killed the father of the girl and sent her off to be a prostitute in some other eastern country. Within 5 minutes. And Francis is on fire already there. Shortly thereafter, he's nearly shot and killed. Why anyone would like to shoot him, I don't know. From his deathbed, he tells the viewer his story. There are two story strands, two Once Upon a Time in Triad Society, as you'll know. In the first one, we see the picture of a young, noble triad that grew into Ugly Quan. In the other half, he completely dismisses this. This is bullshit. I was mean from the beginning. I was evil. I like being evil. And many events that has occurred in the first half sort of is turned on its head, and he's just playing out the most vile character you'll ever find in the movie. And it's an extremely funny black comedy with that sort of it hits the right spots. It really knows what it's doing. It's very much like a tried movie that like you have seen, but it just extremely funny and knows the genre it's dealing with and knows how to make fun of the convention that it's dealing with. And Francis does, I think it's a signature role for him in terms of the over-the-top behavior and just general charisma within that acting range. I mean, he's absolutely loving this. Not having seen Young and Dangerous, I don't know how over the top he went in Young and Dangerous. I mean, many people say he stole that film, but I don't know if he's, you know, extremely productive in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Well, from what I could remember, he was actually more of a colder character, more evil, yeah, in a way that he's going to drug this person, trick them into doing that, just sort of like the evil mastermind behind the plan. Yeah.
And not funny as such?
No, not that I really could remember of. It's been a wee while since I watched it, and obviously it's due another watch soon, but still.
You've never seen this Once Upon a Time in Triad Society?
No, I've only managed to see the sequel.
Yeah, and it's a good thing you mentioned the sequel. It's actually unrelated. It's it's not even the Ugly Quan character, but the sequel deserves its own segment because that works as well. Francis plays sort of the cowardly triad who wants to have nothing to do with the triad world but still needs to be in it somehow. One of my favorite scenes in the sequel is The sequel builds towards a big triad brawl, which I'm sure you've never seen in a triad movie. And, you know, everyone's waiting and waiting. No one knows why they're there. They just need to show off and look mean and have all the blades hidden in newspapers. But no one really fights until Francis moves in and shouts to, who is it, Roy Chung's character?
Yeah.
And they're apparently in opposite gangs, and he shouts to him, "Hey, you dickhead! Hello!" And everyone, "What are you saying? What did you say?" And he inadvertently starts the triad brawl, which is I think that concept is so absolutely drop dead hilarious. So both those movies by the same director, Cha Chun-Yi, is his sort of only real, I would dare to say, masterpiece. I think it works perfectly. And he hasn't really done well since. The only film I can think of where he sort of rebounded into something noticeable was a film made a few years ago called Super Kid.
Right.
So it's a kids movie with a slightly dark twist to it. So I wouldn't say it's suitable for all audiences, but you know, any movie that references Men Behind the Sun, which is quite a harsh exploitation film, mm-hmm. sort of isn't working. You know, working for the kiddies solely. But going back to Once Upon a Time in Triad Society, the sole connection to the real Young and Dangerous universe, I think it has, and you need to correct me possibly, Stu, on this, is Spencer Lamb. He plays a priest in this film, and he plays, you know, he does his scene twice as well, because he's a priest that tries to talk Ugly Quan into doing something good. And at times he reaches him, at other times he doesn't reach him at all. But was that the case?
In the first probably 4 movies he made appearances as, well, just the triad turned priest who spent most of the first movie trying to turn, like, the Young and Dangerous gang, like, repent for their sins. There's a scene where he was stuck in an elevator with Jordan Chan, and like, Jordan Chan's like, well, go tell your god to fix this elevator, then I might listen to him. Then he just kind of looks to the ceiling, and then pow, power's back on.
Oh, divine intervention. Is it sort of a supporting role, or just a few scenes he's in? You know,
a supporting role. He usually tries and helps point them into the right direction for the wrongs they've done, like many priests. And then I think Jerry Lamb tries to console him by offering him some LSD.
Oh. Sounds healthy and balanced.
Indeed.
So without spoiling anything, he never really reaches the whole gang anyway? In terms of...
No, but he just kind of remains with them, but more think he knows they're doing the good, but it's a bit late for them now.
It's a valid subject to talk about when we're talking about Young and Dangerous versus Once Upon a Time in Triad Society. Many people sort of blamed Young and Dangerous for glorifying the triad lifestyle, and Once Upon a Time in Triad Society tries to, you know, as many movies have done, though, that to paint the triad lifestyle is sort of weird and wacky and completely bogus, and wannabe triads looking like clowns, literally. I mean, the way they look. but what do you have to say to that in terms of the glorifying of the triad lifestyle?
Yeah, I could tell. Well, there is points where it does show you. Well, you see the main triads. They're all sort of young, good-looking. Half of them have done work as like canto pop singers. They're all fashionable, and it's just basically them taking the law into their own hands. The police can't stop us. Taking out the bad guy, getting the girl. That's hard to see why it's not like glamorizing it.
But reading reviews just briefly and stuff, I think they, you know, I don't know if they got away from it necessarily, but, you know, they didn't reprise, you know, the extreme sort of alluring aspect to the triad lifestyle as the series went on. I mean, the character certainly got a bit older by the fifth or sixth movie.
Yeah, obviously the characters break out into their own throughout the series, with even characters being killed off during the 6, 7, 8 movies.
Spin up.
This is going all the way into Andrew Lau directing the prequel in early 2000, 2001. Yeah. But yeah, obviously I've run out of words to say.
I have a question. If we're speaking about the spin-off films, I've seen one outside of Once Upon a Time in Triad Society, which is its own sort of thing, but one was Portland Street Blues.
Right.
It was the Sister 13. Is that her name?
Yeah.
Sandra Ohm's character. Very good drama. I was going to ask about the Jordan Chan character. He had his own spin-off film. Was that Those Were the Days?
Yep.
Was that any good?
Yeah. I found it. It worked well with the films because Jordan Chan is missing from the fifth Young and Dangerous movie, which most people often set back, saying that's probably the worst one because quite a lot of people preferred his character to Eakin's character.
Mm-hmm.
Blasphemy.
he has an as good of a hairdo as Eakin does.
Exactly. But it is... the film's almost put in the way of kind of what he'd done whilst he wasn't, like, whilst the fifth movie was happening.
Ah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
where he gets,
I
think the story's roughly, he gets into trouble, he has to leave Hong Kong, goes and lay low in some, maybe, I think it was maybe Taiwan, meets a girl, falls in love, and still, like, all the troubles for the past creep up on him. The usual.
Did they have any sort of cameos to connect the Young and Dangerous movies with each other?
Yeah, they had. I think it was Sandra Ohm's character was getting married, which was the perfect excuse for everyone and anyone from the other movies to show up as guests.
Yeah, you remember the ending of Portland Street Blues as well?
Mm-hmm.
They had an excuse to have, you know, Eakin lead. You know, a big gang. That was the worst part of that film. Not necessarily because of Eakin, but it was a good film up to that point. It was sort of a cheap gag to throw in there.
Yeah,
otherwise a solid film. And I think it was the same director, Raymond Yip,
right,
of Portland Street Blues, and that particular Those Were the Days, about the seventh Hong Kong movie called in English, Those Were the Days. Well, it's a universe to explore, and. Even if you haven't seen Young and Dangerous, it's Once Upon a Time in Triad Society. It's not; it really doesn't acknowledge it. So it's a movie you can watch at any time. Not for everyone's taste, not because it's graphic or anything, but it's offbeat. It's quirky. It's a low budget creative as well, and both movies are sorely missing on DVD.
Exactly. I think it was to the point there was almost online partitions.
Yeah, there was attempted, anyway. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we spoke about, I mean, Hong Kong movies isn't, unless we're talking about the big ones, the companies aren't pursuing them anyway. I mean, I think they're easily found, but it's not it's a matter of finding a market to release them in, and I guess France and Japan would be sort of the first place I guess Once Upon a Time in Triad Society would turn up. But I would do my best to make a custom DVD if they did turn up.
Sliding on over to our last watch film segment. Throwing it over to Ken since there's no one else in the room. What movies have you seen lately, Ken?
A few movies as usual, but I'd like to single out one called a war drama made in Taiwan in 1990 called A Home Too Far, directed by Chu Yen-ping, also known as Kevin Chu. Chu Yen-ping is mostly considered a hack director, a director of hokey films, trashy films. And no wonder, I mean, he made Island of Fire, which is perceived by many as the worst Jackie Chan film ever made. But I'd like to say this, though. And this leads into the discussion of A Home Too Far. Island of Fire, if you watch the full-length director's cut, which is available in Taiwan on DVD, it runs almost 2 hours, as opposed to the Hong Kong cut that runs sort of 90 minutes, I think. There are instincts in there, good dramatic instincts that never really fitted into the Hong Kong version. But then again, the other side of Chu Yen-ping is he, and this is why I'm such a big fan of him, he has done in several movies the thing of copying scenes from American films or other known films beat by beat, shot by shot. I think that there's a prison movie called Cool Hand Luke, which stars Paul Newman. I think there are a few scenes copied straight from that and into Island of Fire. Unashamedly. Completely unashamedly. And that's why I've always liked Julian Pink. He's done that in a few other films. Golden Queen's Commando is a good example there. He's copied a famous scene from Sergio Leone's Duck You Sucker, also known as A Fistful of Dynamite, beat by beat. And what I always liked about him is he's sincere about it somehow. He loves the films he copies. And, well, he gets away with it, but it's not as annoying as one would think. That's true for Island of Fire, but it's definitely not true, I think, for A Home Too Far, which was also shorter in Hong Kong, but the two-hour Taiwan version, the director's cut, it's a pretty solid war drama. Quite harrowing. There's a few big battle scenes that sort of pulled no punches. Not alongside Saving Private Ryan, extreme battle scenes, but you know, not far off either. It's a solid drama. Co-stars Andy Lau in a supporting performance, not bad at all. It's actually quite good, and really quite an engaging piece, and shows that Chu Yin-ping, he had sort of a rare outburst of dramatic creativity when making part of Island of Fire, because most of the cut stuff from Island of Fire was actually the very good dramatic stuff. A Home Too Far has the dramatic stuff intact in the Hong Kong version, but it's way too tight. I mean, if you're missing 20 or 30 minutes, you have to cut somewhere. So there are a lot of, you know, the soldiers bonding and stuff like that when they're not fighting, that's cut from the Hong Kong version. But, you know, you can't have drama. You must have war and action and blood. But Home Too Far constantly recommended, and amongst the very few Chu Yin-ping fans out there, I think it's very regarded. And he hasn't really done as well since. But he's making a new movie now. Many people probably have heard of it. Kung Fu Dunk. The basketball movie with Ye Chow.
Right.
And he's actually directing that. It comes out during the Lunar New Year. And most people probably think that it's a rip-off of, well, Charlie Zocchi, Kung Fu Hustle, everything about, you know, those films. But we'll see. Maybe he has some magic still left in him. But Home Too Far comes recommended. It's a solid war drama. And used it.
Well, for me this week, I watched Golden Chicken, starring Sandra Ng, directed by Samson Chu, co-starring Eric Sang Chi-Wai. And yeah, it was actually quite a decent comedy. I think it might have ran a little bit long, but still, it was the lovable story of a well-known hooker and just a man in debt stuck in what could almost be called like a little ATM shop.
Yeah.
And basically he holds her up, wanting oh so many $1,000. She explains she ain't got any of this money. There's a power cut and they're locked in. So, what could you do to pass the time? Well, Sandrum happens to have this over a dozen fairly amusing, well, stories of her life, which happens just to be all about whoring. Because what I should point out is chicken is a slang term for hooker. I think that's in Cantonese.
Yeah, I heard the Chinese word the other day. I don't know if it's guy or something like that. Well, whatever.
Which actually doesn't relate, but on the note of Young and Dangerous, that is the character name of Jordan Chan. And he is called Chicken for that reason, because he is pretty much a whore.
Nice. You would want that in 5 movies.
Anyway, the movie's got its fair share of guest appearances. We've got Andy Lau making appearances as Andy Lau. Yep, Hong Kong superstar Andy Lau.
Sort of a fantasy sequence, isn't it?
Yeah, there's one where she meets him in person giving him a massage, and another one where he kind of helps her in the time of need by climbing at the TV set.
As Andy Lau does. Mm-hmm. You know, he's Andy Lau.
He could do anything he wants, and Fock will still love him for it.
You also notice, of course, that the movie sort of stops at historical points in Hong Kong history.
Yep. I think it's almost matched with the historical haircuts she goes through.
Yeah. You know, she's not perceived as the most good-looking hooker in the stable. Probably the least good-looking hooker in the stable.
Yeah, I think she was quoted as spunky. Which, in some countries, that's not a good thing.
It sounds... yeah. we're not exactly, you know, clued into the detailed Hong Kong history. But I remember Golden Chicken sort of did a good job, you know, making us understand where we're at, especially in cinematic history. She does a little impression of a famous actor, the Drunken Master impression. You remember that?
Yep. There's a couple. Well, yeah, I was glad you mentioned that because, as you mentioned, with it showing you significant points in Hong Kong history, they also match it up with almost the movies of the time or TV dramas where you get to see Chow Yun-fat with a big old head of hair.
Yeah, probably around the Bund era, the era he made the soap or gangster drama, the Bund at that time.
Yeah, there's also guest appearances from Tony Leung Kar-fai, who's kind of dressed up as an old fogey professor.
Oh, yeah.
And even an awfully dressed down Easton Chan, who's quoted, well, his character name was quoted down as Steely Willy. Which says everything about his character.
Yeah. Didn't they have a shower scene of sorts? Him and Sandra?
Yeah, I think she was showering him down. Yeah. But she was using something like laundry detergent because they ran out of just shower gel.
Mm. Well, I remember Golden Chicken. I thought it was uneven, but had its good points. But I actually liked the sequel better.
Right.
Which is probably due to us being more familiar with the historical eras it covers, including the SARS outbreak. Mm-hmm. But it's the same director, and I think it was a better dramatic side to, you know, it was pretty downbeat at times, but also wacky. I mean, the beginning, she meets, the beginning of the year is 2046.
Ah.
And this was before Wong Kar-wai's film had come out. He had been working on it for very long, and she meets Chapman Toe and tells, you know, she's old at that point, so... She has stories to tell about Chapman Toe because he wants to kill himself. But it's better. I thought it was a better movie, and Andy Lau is in it again. A splendid cameo in that film, which makes total sense. If you, he's sort of he's a big person in the future now that he's old, and it makes absolutely perfect sense for him to. I'll say no more.
Right, but I'll definitely look out that film next because I am intrigued.
Yeah, it's a director Samson Choi, he has made a few films sort of focusing on that nostalgia, on history. Most notably, a trilogy of films. I'm just going to pull up the name of it because I never remember them properly. So. Horse music in between. between me looking it up. A trilogy of films, first which was Yes to You, Yes to Me, Yesterday. And the other one was, the second one was Over the Rainbow Under the Skirt. And the third one, Yesterday You, Yesterday Me. These focused on a teenager growing up, basically. Very touching film, also very frank film sexually. Because if you're a teenager, you go through that, those kind of things. Those kind of sticky things. but he has a thing for the nostalgia aspect. This does not go for history as such, but and that film is good usage of Eric Zhang as his father.
Right.
That's a good, you know, ultimately is his mentor, even though he has his clashes with his father. Ultimately, he's his father, and he looks up to him. Mm-hmm. So, absolutely recommend that film. And most recently, I think you've heard of the film called Mr. Cinema.
Yes.
And Samson Choi directed that as well. Against the backdrop of history, through the eyes of, I guess it's Anthony Wong, plays a local cinema manager of sorts. I haven't seen the film yet, but again, it uses history as a backdrop. And I guess Samson doesn't feel like that theme is getting old. You can always explore it.
Mm-hmm. Joining us now from out of nowhere is Green Fan Mike.
Hello.
Yep, and to get him up to speed with the current going-ons here, we've got three questions for you. One, what single film would you show to someone who has never seen an Asian film before?
Well, obviously, having the script beforehand, am I giving away...
Question two!
Am I giving away trade secrets here?
No. You just...
Well, I actually had a little bit of think about this one. And so, I think the main two choices I'd go with is it going to be action or is it going to be comedy?
Right.
Because I'm thinking, one, Asian films, generally, action, well, in a lot of them, is a lot better than, or a lot different to what you'd find in Western films. Mm-hmm. But comedy is more likely to win someone's heart, I think.
Right.
You know, if somebody really makes you laugh, then you're more likely to, you know, like them, aren't you, and enjoy their company. So I'm thinking comedy. And so then if you're going to go Asian and comedy, then you've got to be Stephen Chow. So then...
Not Dean Check?
Yeah. No. Well, it depends who I was showing the film to. If it was somebody I didn't like, then yeah, I probably would pop a bit of Dean Check on.
Look at him. He's peeing his pants.
Yeah. Maybe just take all the films and highlight the best, you know, take out the best Dean Check moments and just give them a little, you know, best of Dean Check film to watch. So I'm thinking a Stephen Chow film that's particularly Hong Kong-y. Not that that's a word, but it's going to be for this podcast. So I'm thinking, I'm going to say Shaolin Soccer.
Okay.
Because one, it's hilariously funny. Mm-hmm. Two, it's definitely got the Hong Kong Asian kind of action flavour to it.
Right.
Really big, over the top, but really exciting and really energetic. And it's got that mixture in a comedy film, which you don't get in a lot of Western films, between violence and belly laughs.
Yeah.
For example, I'm just thinking the scene that popped into my head now is when Stephen Chow and, I can't remember the guy's name, but they're in his bar that he runs.
It's Wong Yat Fei.
Yeah, and they're doing a song, a karaoke performance, and then they get brutally beaten afterwards. Yeah. And it's hilarious, but that kind of mixture of comedy and quite hard violence is something you'd rarely see in a Western film, I think. Maybe something by the Coen brothers. They're always good at mixing kind of violence, slightly bloody and hard, but also slapsticky violence with comedy. But they're quite rare. So I'm thinking like Big Lebowski or Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I've got some really good moments of that in. See, I'm going to have to say Shaolin Soccer.
Okay. Switching on over to question two. Can you recommend any good books on Asian cinema?
Sorry, Stu. Did Mike have a second? Did he have the action bits?
Well, no. I was saying, if I was going to think about it, I'd think either comedy or action. But if I was going to choose, I'd go with comedy. If it was going to be an action film, it all depends on who you're showing it to, isn't it? As well, because different people like different things. Most of my friends would probably appreciate the ass kickery, which also isn't a word, but shall be for this podcast. I don't know, Police Story, something like that. You can't go wrong with Police Story, can you?
No.
And in fact, if somebody watched it and didn't like it, then there's a good chance that they wouldn't be watching any more films with me.
But you never know, do you, Mike, what you might find in a friend, sort of a sensibility that they never knew existed, because they never knew this kind of Asian or movie existed, and you sort of awake that through a Police Story or whatever.
Like a bit of Hong Kong Category 3 or something.
Yeah, why not? You never know this existed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but yeah, I think I'd stick with the comedy.
I think that was different before, when Hong Kong cinema wasn't as widely spread. You could surprise people a lot more. Now people know probably a lot more what to expect out of a Jackie Chan movie. They'll still be mega impressed by Police Story and stuff, but it's not entirely new.
Well, because the influence has been used in so many different films all over the world, hasn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of the elements are quite... it's like you couldn't wow some... Well, I was about to say you couldn't wow somebody with an old Hong Kong John Woo film. Obviously you could, because of the quality of the film. But obviously a lot of the style and the action and stuff has been replicated either well or poorly in so many American films.
It's unavoidable, really.
Yeah.
But we discussed this before, and me and Stu had a different take on it, that if we want to show someone a new, call it reference film, that is a first good watch, or if you want to go with an old one, so obviously Shaolin Soccer on its own is a fresh film because it's so full of imagination that not 20 filmmakers before him were, they weren't doing that.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's a fresh thing, and therefore a very good choice.
Yeah, thank you, Ken. Well, what did you two choose then? Obviously, I was out of the loop for that.
The Killer.
All right, that was your choice, Ken.
Yep.
And I chose Kung Fu Hustle.
Ah, no Ekin Cheng. No Young and Dangerous.
No. No.
I thought you'd be straight for that.
Ken suggested it. I said maybe, but no. That's for dessert.
That's when they get a little bit more quality stew time, is that?
That'll be enough of that. Right. I'm going to give you a question too, because you're pissed and I don't like it. You're more ruthless.
Oh, this one's going to be short and sweet, my friend.
Question two: can you recommend any good books on Asian cinema?
No.
Question three: does Ken deserve a fan website?
That's cool. That's the way to ask that question, Stu.
Well, I think a simpler question would be, does Ken not deserve to have a fan website? Who's going to answer yes to that? I think you could count, the amount of non-Ken fans would be a much smaller base of people to chat to.
I'm very modest, Mike. You probably can count the amount of Ken fans on, probably 10 of them.
Nah, they're innumerable.
I don't know.
Trust him, he's pissed.
I met them at my mom's. They all like him.
Yeah, everyone's a Ken fan. They just don't... Not necessarily everybody knows it yet.
Oh, smooth one, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
That one that gets you coolest points. all up to next Christmas.
We see, I'm losing points all the time with Stu, so I've got to make him back up with you, Ken.
And I'm
balance it out.
And I'm more easily. You're saying I'm more easily impressed or fooled?
No.
By your smooth talking.
Don't twist my words.
Well, we can now that you're pissed. We can sort of make you doubt.
I never said I was pissed. I said tipsy. That's not the same thing.
We don't give a fuck.
Was that we don't give a fuck?
Yes.
Thanks.
We don't care. You're slightly intoxicated. Now dance.
Well, anyway. You're good and coherent, Mike. So. I'll take your word for it, then. I'll thank you.
Yeah. No problem.
Right, we're going to slide on over once again. Yes, lots of sliding tonight. Sliding on over to the plugs.
And not Mike's last film watched?
Nope, he doesn't deserve it.
Oh.
Unless he could say it in 5 words or less.
I'm getting an absolute shoo-in tonight, aren't I?
Yeah.
I think you're taking it up to dangerous levels here, Stu. It's going to end up with a sort of online fist fight, if that was possible.
where's the Wildman when you need him? He could be taking some of this flack.
Don't know.
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, he expected this, so, well, that's why he's not here.
Sensible man.
So did you watch a film recently, Mike?
I have watched lots of films recently.
You bastard.
Why did you not manage to watch any then, Stu?
Oh no, I did, but I'm just wanting you to mention all the films you watched in 5 words or less.
Magnificent Ruffians. Best Shaw Brothers.
One more.
That's fine.
Wait, no,
isn't
that
it?
Is five. No! Oh no!
Who's keeping
I
track here better?
I failed.
Who can count? The sober one or the slide?
My quits!
Well, I'll actually ask Mike because he has deserved a few more words, seeing
exactly.
As it did count.
Thank you, Ken.
Yes,
and we must ask, is that a Chang'e film?
It certainly is. It's a Venom's film.
Circa 75, 77, 79?
No, maybe 79, maybe 80. I think it's either one of those two, 79 or 80. It's an actual Venom's film as well. Because obviously the Venoms from the five Venoms would be Liu Feng, Luo Meng, Kuo Chuai, Chang Sheng, Wai Pei, and
that was five, wasn't it?
Sun Qian.
Ah, yeah.
The six from the five Venoms, but then Wai Pei only did. I think he was in Invincible Shaolin, and was he in Keep of the Golden Arm? I think maybe. And then it was the other five that appeared in most of the films. But then a lot of fans would count, well, basically any film that's got more than one of those five main actors in.
Mm.
Well, personally, I don't count that as a Venom's film. It needs to be at least four of that group with Chang'e directing, and they need to be in major roles for it to count. And this ticks all the boxes. It's got five of the main actors in. Directed by Chang'e, late 70s, early 80s, right in their peak. It's really funny and really nicely acted. It's really warm as well. There's a really nice spirit to the film. Interplay between the characters and everything. And of course the action is amazing. All the way through. And Liu Feng plays the villain, which is the kind of role he's just perfect for. He can easily give off this really... I don't even know what the word would be, but there's something suspicious about him. I don't know if you know what I mean, but there's just something not quite right. He seems a bit sleazy. And Lo Mung is obviously the good-natured muscle man who's good at beating people up. Jiang Sheng play and Kuo Choi play the kind of cheeky, acrobatic, ragamuffin-type characters, which they're both pretty good at. Sun Qian... Actually, I think out of the five, he's probably got the least amount to do kind of with his character, but he's also very good. And the action is absolutely amazing as well, as you'd expect from a Venom's film. Some really nice weapons fights. And
acrobatics
lots.
All over the place.
Yeah, they have some nice acrobatics. I mean, they don't overdo it. There's a lot of shapes going on, and a lot of weapons fights, and more acrobatics kind of towards the end, the big finale and all that. God, it's an absolutely superb film. It's, as I said in my five words, Stu, I think it probably is my favourite Shaw Brothers film that I've seen so far.
Have you gone through the what do you consider the Venom's films by now?
What you mean, have I watched all of them?
Yeah.
I'm missing Daredevils and Rebel Intruders, which I've actually just ordered.
I have Daredevils here. That is a modern film, isn't it?
What, the Venom's Daredevils one?
Yeah.
What you mean? I mean, that's in the setting.
Yeah, exactly. It's a more set in the 70s or something.
Yeah, well, I think it's actually amongst Venom's fans, as far as I know, it's one of the considered a lesser film. I think it's less popular. Probably because of the modern day setting.
And despite that, they named it Shaolin Daredevils in some places.
Yeah.
Strangely enough.
Well, you know, in the UK, but mainly in America, isn't it? You know, I think we've had this discussion before about ninjas in the title and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Daredevils doesn't sound hard enough. Shaolin Daredevils. In fact, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised they didn't put Ninja Daredevils.
Indeed.
Daredevil Ninjas.
Ah, you're on
a
roll
trick
now,
there.
Man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Which is
Daredevil, Daredevil challenges Ninja versus Shaolin.
If you fit Dragon and Returns in there, I think you're onto a win again.
Yeah. I was going to ask, actually, going back to the Chang-Chi film, was Alexander Fu Sheng ever in what could be perceived as a Venom's film? Or when he made movies with Chang-Chi, was sort of he focused on Fu Sheng rather than incorporating the Venoms?
The first thing film that pops to mind I can think of right now, Life Gamble.
Yeah.
AKA Life Combat in America. That is... Some people might consider that a Venoms film because it has Kuo Choi, Lo Mung and Chiang Sheng in it. And that's as well as Fu Sheng. Personally, I wouldn't say it was a Venom's film. Mm. Based on my own criteria then, because there's only three, and they're not all of them are main characters. Mm. A decent film. I don't love that. Actually, I watched that one recently. Pretty much the same day I watched Magnificent Ruffians, I think.
Is the Brave Archer series any good?
I haven't seen the Brave Archer films yet, actually. But yes, some might consider those... Venoms, although as far as I know, they're not main characters in that either. It's more of a Fu Sheng vehicle.
It's only three or four movies of those, I think. I think it's four. Or even five.
Yeah, there's Brave Archer 1, 2, and 3, and there's no Brave Archer and his mate. Is that correct?
Yeah, one is called that, anyways. I think that's
that
amusing
title.
Yeah, I think it's an amusing title. Look at him. His mate. Look at him and his little friend.
It was Shaolin Temple as well. A classic Chang Chae film. The original Shaolin Temple from 76. That's got... I think that's the first appearance of some of the Venoms. I think Lo Mung is in a very, very small role in that. Might be his first appearance in a Shaw Brothers film. Chiang Sheng, Kuo Choi are in that one as well. Once again, I wouldn't call it a Venoms film, but they do appear. And obviously Fu Sheng is Fong Sai-uk in that, I believe.
going on over to the plugin section of the show now. I'll let our guests Ken and Mike go first because I'm lazy.
After you, Ken.
I have just a short one here, and it's actually an announcement. Announcement on SoGoodReviews.com. We are expanding the writing staff from 1 to 2. Which is, when you look at it in a percentage angle, quite
100% increase in staff.
Indeed. And it shouldn't surprise you all that I've actually sort of acquired a writer that I will focus on. Drum world, please. everyone's smashing whatever they have next to the computer. Focusing on Ninja Flicks.
Oh, nice.
I was looking at the IMDb one day, just looking for any information on a particular ninja flick, and the guy who wrote the particular review, the comment, he knew sort of the genre and had the skill to write about it in a funny way, which is sort of is required when talking about these cut and paste ninja flicks. You have to have a good sense of humor about it and translate that into words. I always had a problem with, and I contacted him, and he's agreed to come on board and write. Mostly it will be these quick take reviews, but he's submitted a few already, and his work is top notch for new and old fans, hopefully, of these 80s trashy ninja flicks. And this coming Sunday his first review will be online of Ninja Champion, which, according to him, one of the quotes from his review is, if the Academy, the Academy Awards, ever gave out an award for the most confusing foreign film, then this film would surely win. Would have won that year in 1985. And that sort of sums up what these movies are. They're utterly confusing.
Yeah.
They don't make sense. You just paste in ninjas, take out 10 random minutes or something else, and there you have it.
Make sure Richard Harrison's in there.
Exactly. That one I don't believe he was in, but most of the time he is in those, or guys like Stuart Smith, which is a cult hero, bad acting cult hero in these films. Very emotional, very over the top. Always fun to hear because his voice is always dubbed. Takes a certain sensibility, and Troy Shingleton is his name. He has the correct sensibility and the skill to translate into words. So welcome him, fellas, on Sunday. Give his review a read. So that's it.
Well, predictably, I'm going to plug www.greenfandvd.com for, it's my label.
Mm-hmm.
Selling Ninja and Ancient China, that kind of stuff. Should be a trailer for Return of the Deadly Blade, which will be our next release, popping up sometime soon. And details of the disc specs will be down on the subtitles. So that takes a while, but yeah, that'll be the next one. We've got www.shawbrothers-reloaded.com.
Right.
Which I believe it's a German-based site. I think it's run independently of Celestial, but they've obviously got the ear of Celestial, because they get obviously news before anybody else, and lots of interviews and stuff, so you can get some really good interviews with Chen Quan Tai and loads of other people on their website that are really good. And there's all kinds of lobby cards, posters, information about Shaw Brothers, and also there's a Shaw Brothers, they're calling it the 16 Sparkling Diamonds European Tour at the moment, and coming to London, Paris, Berlin, Rome and Barcelona in December this year will be
a banner of that.
Yeah, 16 former Shaw Brother actors like Ku Fung, Jimmy Wang Yu, I'm not sure who else.
Dick Long.
Di Long, yeah.
Ching Li, the female actress.
Yeah, there's going to be lots, 16 in total. Yeah, but that should be amazing. I mean, Kufung, come on! I would sell quite a few of my body parts to go to that, to meet Kufung. So I am extremely excited. So yeah, check out that site. It's got, if you're into Shaw Brothers, so old school Kung Fu, then there's buckets of stuff you're going to find down there. Yeah, so obviously, like, you know, I would plug HKC UK, but you're going to do that too anyway, so.
Okay. Well, as Mike said, I'm going to plug HKC UK, translates into .co.uk. And another, well, a plug for what's left of DragonsDenUK.com, the ever so lovely AsianBay.co.uk, the ever so grungy but so awesome so good reviews.com.
Grungy.
Very grungy.
Okay.
Especially with the now flung in addition of ninjas.
I take that as a good thing then.
It's a good thing.
Grungy, okay. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
We fooled him. We fooled him into thinking that's a good thing. They said behind his back.
Anyway, where was I? Yes. Gonna give a quick shout out to our forum for the newly launched scheme, Members Only. Where you join our forum and you're gonna be given access to outtakes, deleted scenes, which probably quite a lot from this episode, show scripts, and a hell of a lot more. You won't be able to find these on the Podcast on Fire website or iTunes. These can only be found on the POF forum. Visit podcastonfire.com/forum or click any of the forum banners on the website at podcastonfire.com.
Nice one.
We've got to give out congratulations to forum member Martin, because you've won a DVD for the questions you provided for us tonight. We'll contact you soon. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Kenneth Bolson.
Mike Banner.
And we'll catch you later. But don't worry, after editing, I'll come out looking like the good guy in this conversation.
And do some dubbing in of dubbing of Mike and dubbing of me. Try to replicate.
I'll just find footage from past podcasts and edit it all together.
Hello, what? Stu, you are the greatest. I like you. Hello.
Ekin Cheng rules.
Give me Ekin Cheng movies. Speaking of cyborg.
I typed in Andy Lau fan assault, and hopefully, I was hoping that'd get me there, but alas, no.